Chairman, introducing Mr. Stephen Mayne.
Morning, Chairman. A couple of years ago, this might have been regarded as an impertinent question, but I think with what we've seen with the margin calls for directors, the likes of Allco, MFS and Centro, big rumours around ABC Learning and our stock tanking in a similar way, certainly to ABC Learning, not as bad as the others. I'd like to ask the Chief Executive if he has a margin loan over his 52 million shares, and whether that's coming into play at the current share prices.
Okay. Well, Steve, Rob.
Well, the question is, do I have a margin loan? I do have a margin loan against some of the shares I own, but it's far less than 10%, and I've got plenty of other assets I could use in respect to that if that was necessary.
And any other directors, particularly the incoming chairman, I think he's got 3 or 4 million shares. Any margin loans involved there?
Would be, again, similar to Robert, less than 10% of my holding would be covered by a margin loan facility. So there is no question that I've had no approaches in relation to that.
Okay, that's terrific. One other question is, I think the debt issue is important. Can you tell us a bit more about when our first loan's actually due to be rolled over? I mean, the market's reacting against opaque, complex structures, and we've obviously got debt on our managed schemes. We've got some corporate debt, and thankfully very limited debt on the director shareholdings. But when are those loans first? You know, when's the first crop actually up for renewal? And just my last question, I noticed that the press were describing it as the $400,000 Timbercorp Australian Stakes at Moonee Valley on Saturday. Now, Chairman, I know you're a former VRC committee man, and our incoming chairman's a former chairman of the VRC. In these straitened times, I would just offer you some sort of gentle counsel that maybe future big licks on sponsoring races is perhaps a pre-debt crisis thing. And could you let us know exactly how much we did spend on Saturday? Sure. Thank you.
I hope I'm not losing confidence when I say that the total cost is $35,000 against the $400,000 prize money. That is shared equally between the business and Robert Hans for personal reasons. So the actual cost to the business is $17,500. For that, the company received, I believe, excellent exposure across a broad range of people who have money. And secondly, and I think this is probably more importantly, it enables us to meet and greet and entertain a vast number of advisors who are the backbone of our business. By and large, my experience in racing has been quite considerable, both as a sponsor and as a receiver, as chairman of the Melbourne Racing Club, is that it's probably one of the cheapest investments that I have seen, and well worth the effort.
Thanks, Chairman. You mentioned in your last answer about the racing question that it was useful to market to advisors who are, quote, the backbone of our business. Now, I want to focus a bit on this question of distribution and our relationship with the advisors, commissions and things like that. It's fair to say that with West Point and even Centro to a lesser degree, but certainly MFS in a very major way, the whole planner dealer group issue is coming up again. Okay, you've got the Alan Kohler campaign. He's run a very vigorous campaign against advisors. We've lost our political protection in Senator Grant Chapman, who was the great champion of advisors. He's lost his seat. He's out. You've got the Labor-connected industry funds led by Gary Weaven, who've run long campaigns against the conflicts of interest of advisors, because the industry funds, controlled by the unions in part, don't ever pay any commissions to anyone. So I guess my fear is that we don't have any obvious regulatory or political protection anymore. So when the Rudd government announced a review into the auto industry, they get the ACTU to help out and do it. Same with the textile industry. You can see where that's going. But they're going to look at us and they're going to say, even the National Party were attacking Timbercorp and MIS schemes last year. If the natural constituency of this sort of thing is bagging it, why would we come out and protect it when our own, the Gary Weavens of the world, are bagging it? And most importantly, from a governance point of view, the Kohler argument is pretty strong. And we, I presume, like most, have conflicted dealers who provide advice and do sales. So they're telling people, yeah, go with Timbercorp, nice commission for me type situation. So how are we placed if there is a regulatory backlash that tackles these issues of conflicts for dealers, seeing you as you have described them as the backbone of our business? The cash on cash returns haven't been great relative to other asset classes, certainly in the early projects. Encouraging to hear Sol's comments about the fact that we are heading towards double digit. But I guess just looking at the share price coming under pressure, I just see a few storm clouds on the horizon. We've got a lot of debt. Our distribution model is facing regulatory risks, there's tax risk. So can you spend a bit of time talking specifically about that distribution dealer group model and address the arguments that the likes of Weaven and Kohler make, which is, you know, basically attacking completely what has been the lifeblood and backbone of our sales mechanisms?
Stephen, I think a lot of that depends upon the dimension of the business. I think it would be fair to say that we would like to have direct sales, or a direct sales force, dealing with our client. But we are a young business, we're in the process of growing, and you can't always afford to have the cost of your own ongoing sales force to handle these situations. So sometimes it's a case of needs is, needs must. Perhaps one of these days we'll get to Nevada and be able to have sufficient people to be able to go directly to the clients that we would like to enrol in our business, and I suspect that's one of our objectives. But it may be some time as we grow before we can get to that particular stage. So, have you got a question?
Look, we have no problems with a review of commissions or remunerations of advisors. Indeed, many years ago we made a conscious decision within our industry to be, if you like, at the low or mid to low end in terms of the commissions that we pay, which admittedly are still quite high. We've also offered advisors the opportunity to give up all or a substantial portion of commissions to take, if you like, annual or trail income. We've also we also associate with a number of advisors, and I'm pleased to see there's an increasing proportion of them who've moved to what's called a fee-for-service model, where they essentially don't take the commission, they simply hand it back to the client and instead charge the client a particular fee for managing their portfolio. So irrespective of whether upfront commissions or ongoing commissions or trails or whatever model were adopted, we're comfortable that we would see continued support for our products in that type of environment, and also our new products that we're working on going forward will certainly not be based on the same types as well. So as I say, in summary, we're very comfortable with any review or any regulatory change.
To say, following up that comment about the number of people getting up, I've been about 300 AGMs. This would be in the top three or four of all time in terms of the quality of the debate. It's great to have 10 different shareholder questions. So Steve Johnson, one of the owners of Intelligent Investment, flies down from Sydney for it. Sydney fund manager Fred Woolard flies down, so it's terrific to see it. Wish more AGMs were like this. My last question is goes back to that issue about the notes and whether if the note holders vote not to roll over, it's a forced sale. Can you talk, and I might get Mr. Paluzzi, the auditor, up on this one as well, from Deloitte's. It's the question of cross-collateralisation. The whole issue with the likes of Orco and MFS has all been, well, you can see the listed company, we can see the debt there, that's fine. But there's also debt in some of the managed vehicles, and, you know, if that falls over, like with Centro, you know, that falls over, then there's a question of, is all that debt recognised, and does that trigger cross guarantees, cross collateralisation, as they call it? So, and then you get this whole cascading fear where, if suddenly investors want to run to the door and they can't, you end up doing a a Centro or an MFS and you end up freezing a fund and your brand's gone and that's it in this game, which is a confidence business. So can you talk a bit about if the managed funds and all the growers, etc., and the loan book really are completely ring-fenced, absolutely separate, no cross-guarantees like we've seen with MFS New Zealand, etc. So is it completely ring-fenced and is the auditor satisfied about that, or where do the liabilities kick in? What sort of situations does the parent company suddenly get lent on to lend a hand to some of these other geared up vehicles that we've got out there?
Peter, I'm sure we haven't got any problems in that area, but I'd just like to check with my colleagues to ensure that's true.
Stephen, addressing PLL first, your comment was perhaps insightful in that we do guarantee the debt of PLL, that's $24 million, and for that reason that debt sits on our balance sheet. But that is the only example. There are other entities, if you like, for example, the Timbercorp Primary Infrastructure Fund that has debt, and there's that has debt, that would be the main one to refer to. And in that case, no, we don't have any guarantees in relation to that debt. I think it's as simple as that. Sandra, I'm not sure if you've got anything you'd like to add.
That's a completely confirmed Sol's point, which is nice to know. Stephen, I appreciate your comment. I too am delighted with the quality of the questions that we've received today. Yes, Stephen?
Just a couple of questions. Rod's the incoming chairman. We always love our chairs to be utterly independent and at arm's length from the company. And I just wanted to seek clarification. Page 96 notes that Rod's Cranley nominees struck up a 5-year consultancy arrangement at $400,000 a year. I think that might have been associated with an Armand investment that he has. I think, can we just have some background on what happened there? I also noticed that we put out a stock exchange announcement a few months ago saying that Rod had given up had 3 million shares in voluntary escrow and that had been lifted,
yes.
Which when you see that you instantly think, oh, does Rod want to sell? Now he's the incoming chairman. So is this going to be cleaned up now that he's going to be chairman, or are we going to have ongoing sort of just not a good look to have a chair who is also someone who we're doing related party deals with, consultancies, etc., etc.? Love the fact that he's got a big shareholding, but would prefer a more plain vanilla ongoing relationship if possible.
Just on the escrow point, Rod's shares came out of escrow purely as a function of time. They, when they were first issued, there was a two-year escrow period, which is industry practice, and they came out. There wasn't any conscious decision made. As to the consulting services, the background of that is that Rod would be perhaps one of Australia's top experts in terms of involvement in investment in arms, and the board felt that it would be extremely useful at the time of acquiring Rod's interest in what was then a jointly owned arms business, that the company continued to be able to benefit from Rod's expertise, and agreed a payment regime. The fact that Rod being made chairman or not chairman or deputy chairman or whatever is completely independent and irrespective of that, although I acknowledge that it would mean that Rod under the rules wouldn't be treated as independent. But the fact that it's been a longer standing arrangement, when does it expire? When is it? Three more years. And that will certainly, I understand, be looked at in the process of any as well.
Okay, convenient enough.